Coming up on AI Having a Clue.
But no one knew that it was AI. It was that good.
Because AI is so accessible, and that's the great thing about AI, but it's also a downside as well. AI is something you either learn or you don't. And if you don't, I think you're just going to be set a bit behind.
One of the best uses of AI out there, and it's the first time ever in the history of exploring different planets that an AI model was used to decide the route.
We're talking political deepfakes
and Keir Starmer battles chatbots.
We will fight them on the keyboard.
That's very good.
Hello and welcome to AI Haven't a Clue. I'm AI novice George Butler, and this is the podcast that explores the wild world of AI, which, much like hit film Wuthering Heights, is a chart-topping sensation, contains a polarizing leading duo, and is highly sensual. He's the Margot Robbie to my Jacob Elordi. It's AI expert James Chandler.
No. These have got to stop. I preferred it when you had Grok doing them, to be honest.
Wow. It's a bit mean.
Where are you getting this from?
My brain.
It's too much. It just...
No LLM would come up with that, would it?
Oh, hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you?
Very excited for...
I can tell you're excited. You've got this.
There's a lot going on this week in the world of AI.
Yeah,
we've got political battles in the AI wars. A brilliant listener question this week. And I suppose, in a way, our guest this week's a bit political.
Yes, one of my favourites as well, Matt Reconstructs History, who we talked about before, incredible YouTube channel using AI and his passion for history to recreate some of the best moments, Gettysburg Address, London, Amsterdam, New York. I mean, phenomenal. I can't believe we've landed him, actually. He's like a proper celeb in this space.
It's like nerd fodder, this, isn't it?
Yeah, big time.
You're a bit more excited than I am.
Phil Rowley was excited about him as well.
Well, say no more. Say no more. Listen, I'm excited to meet Matt. I don't know much about him, but we'll find out later.
Great.
Last week, James, you brought up the fact there is no AI emoji.
Yeah, you were going to get onto the emoji people.
I've emailed them.
Have
genuinely,
you? Oh, okay.
I've emailed
right,
them.
Yeah.
They haven't yet got back to me. Their website, by the way, it looks like it's about 100 years old. It's crazy. But we put out a clip from the podcast about the fact there is no AI emoji. And the question was, what could it be? What should it look like? Few people got back to us.
Right.
Lottie said a brain in a cog.
Yeah.
Jen said wired eyes. I'm assuming as in like eyes which have wires in.
A bit Clockwork Orange for me, yeah. I think.
An account called I Didn't Win the Lottery came up with two suggestions.
Okay, yeah.
Again, a wired brain, lots of wired, and the other one was a cyborg. The final one from Stephen, it should be a poo.
Well, we've got that one already, Stephen, haven't we? So we're not going to...
Stephen said it should be a poo emoji.
We're not going to use that one. Okay, keep going.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
More ideas would be accepted.
There.
This could be a continual bit.
An emoji lexicographer is the name for someone who comes up with the emojis. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
That's who you're talking to.
Have you just put that into ChatGPT?
Yeah, brain. Yeah.
Right, really busy edition of the show. We've got the news coming up first. So if you do want to keep in touch with what's going on in the world of AI, our Substack every single week is delivered into your inbox.
It is.
With a nice little roundup of the biggest stories. If you head to aihaveanaclue.substack.com,
well done.
You can subscribe for free. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast, catch us on Patreon. patreon.com/aihaveanaclue. All the web addresses today.
Yeah, very good.
Loads of bonus goodies and things you get there, as well as supporting the podcast. We'd love that. But enough about links and websites. Should we dive into the news from the world of AI this week?
Yes, please. Yeah.
Right. Shall we start with fighting words from current Prime Minister, at the time of recording, Sir Keir Starmer?
Unbelievable, as if it's going to move that quickly. He has pledged action on online child safety. He said he's going to close the loopholes in the Online Safety Act, which is the piece of legislation that exists, and extend it to cover AI chatbots over concerns about harmful content like deepfakes. So chatbots, AI chatbots, are going to be formally included in the law in the Online Safety Act, And that effectively gives the government some new powers to act more quickly as the technology evolves. And this is an issue we come back to all the time, that regulation and policy is often outpaced by innovation. So this is going to allow them to be a bit more agile rather than kind of waiting years for it to catch up. The government are seemingly getting a bit tougher on social media as well. They're talking about things like limiting addictive features like infinite scroll, otherwise known as kind of doom scroll when you're going through things. They're talking about restricting access to AI bots and blocking VPN workarounds for age checks. So you can go on a virtual private network, which, you know, puts you somewhere anonymously in the world, and you can get over some of this age gating which happens. So yeah, trying to clamp down, I think, on the social media stuff, but interesting that AI is coming into that as well.
We will fight them on the keyboards.
That's very good. Don't claim that as your own, because that's...
So, okay, a few things to break down here. I guess Starmer thinks that he kind of won the kind of mini AI battle against Elon Musk. He sort of is claiming that as a bit of a victory, the whole Grok scandal. And I guess, I don't know, it's interesting because a few months ago, the government was quite bullshy in how pro-AI they are and nothing was going to get in their way.
Yeah.
Clearly the stuff with Grok came, it hit the headlines in a very negative way, and the public kind of probably seemed to be quite supportive politically of the pushback there.
Yeah.
It feels like this is a bit of a gear shift on their positioning when it comes to the world of AI.
I think child safety in general around the world is under the spotlight. I mean, we've seen what's happened with social media in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, it's been talked about that maybe that could be something that he looks at here as a kind of an outright ban. I mean, it's clear that he needs to do something here. The optics of this politically are a bit uncertain, I think, when it comes to the US and Trump, because any sort of impinging on free speech tends to rile them up a little bit, whether it's JD Vance or it's Trump or Elon will be very outspoken in this, I'm sure. So any move to kind of restrict or clamp down on what they see in America as people's right to have free speech, and particularly with American tech companies in focus, is going to get quite interesting. So it'll be interesting to see where the government lands on. Do they try and appease that and keep the relationship there and kind of clear of tariffs and that kind of thing?
It feels like that relationship also has shifted over the last few months as well. So this is all kind of reflective of the times a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a watching brief, this one. Wait and see what happens. Interestingly, lots of praise for this. Some people are being very critical. I think about the guests that we have from Set at 16,
yes,
who I'd probably imagine would say this still doesn't go far enough. They're looking for kind of outright ban. They want a vote on that now. They want timelines. They want all this kind of thing. So as much as it's kind of been welcomed, you know, there's nothing concrete yet. And there are some groups and pressure groups and organisations who are asking for things to move faster and get a little bit more definite.
Okay, really interesting, and many people, I'm sure, would absolutely agree. This is a space that needs to be kind of regulated and looked at a bit more. So I'm sure lots of people thinking this is good news. Moving on now to Hollywood, as the film industry, they're getting a bit sweaty about something new happening in AI.
Have you seen this trailer for Sea Dance? So Sea Dance is the newest AI on the block. It's part of ByteDance, whose biggest company, I guess, is TikTok. They made a trailer which featured Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt having a fight, but no one knew that it was AI. It was that good. Wow. Hollywood, Disney in particular, are up in arms about it.
Is there a reason why Disney in particular are worried about it?
Well, they haven't actually, they've sort of done the seek forgiveness rather than permission trick on using some copyrighted characters. They basically trained, well, this is Disney's claim, that Sea Dance has trained on a library that was pirated from some of their franchises like Marvel and Star Wars. They called it a virtual smash and grab of its intellectual property. So Bob Iger and Disney not pulling any punches here.
So, yeah, I mean, clearly this is a concern, I suppose, because it means that Hollywood standards content can be created quickly, easily, and by anybody.
Yeah.
Ultimately here, is this is the crux of this situation and this issue IP? Is it the importance of IP, because that is the thing that is going to continue to drive people to watch content made by Hollywood?
Yeah.
And also, is it the protection of IP to make sure that not everybody can just steal that?
Well, yeah, I think both, if I'm honest, you know, two random people having a fight and it being kind of brilliant and saying it's AI is one thing. Those two people happening to be some of the world's most famous movie stars certainly gets more likes and clicks and everything else. I doubt Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise are too worried about it, but, you know, they're not getting any royalties or any payment for use of their property.
Well, they're not worried about that maybe, but they might be worried about it if there's a scene of them doing something a bit dodgy in another video that's created. I mean, that's where the big issue lies.
100%. So yeah, of course you get into all that sort of stuff. And we talked about it a couple of episodes ago. Disney have actually been very progressive here and have struck up deals with, I think it was OpenAI, wasn't it? In terms of, you know, protection around the rights. Despite doing that, you know, they're saying they've got this
Well, I suppose they don't mind it if they're getting, you know, paid for the IP and they know it's being used in a place that there's boundaries and guidelines.
Yes,
that's one thing. And this is
exactly,
but this is the Wild West.
Yeah, but we should say ByteDance, who are the holding company, C-Dance is their tool. They've said that they respect intellectual property rights. They say that they'll strengthen safeguards. They haven't said what data is used to train C-Dance, or they haven't said how they're going to prevent it being misused. But yeah, as I said at the top, it's kind of this classic, you know, run quickly, seek forgiveness, it blows up, and then kind of say sorry afterwards, rather than go to Marvel or Star Wars and say, actually, we kind of like to do, can we train your models? No, you can't, and then try and do something else. So there'll be something else next week, next month. But yeah, C-Dance went right to the top of these comparison tables that you get in terms of the power and that it can do just kind of overnight. So it came from nowhere. So yeah, so we've got a new tool. Come on down to the dance floor, ByteDance.
Yeah, really interesting. And you know what's amazing? We talked a few months ago about the Will Smith spaghetti test. You remember that?
Like, yes.
That was you kind of looked at the advancement of AI video creation through videos of Will Smith eating spaghetti, which a few years ago were terrible.
Yeah.
And they've got a little bit better and they looked kind of all right a few months ago. And now it's kind of laughable that was the measure of AI video when this is happening.
Vending machines and spaghetti. Still can't tell the time though. So
still can't tell the time. Yeah, more on that I'm sure to come. And I think the whole IP protection thing is fascinating.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Let's move to the climate now. There's been a lot of discussion about the impact that AI has on the environment. Clearly, LLMs take a lot of energy.
Yep.
Also, people are saying AI could be the thing that fixes the climate. What's the latest here?
Yeah, it's a new report. It's been commissioned by a couple of groups, Beyond Fossil Fuels and Climate Action Against Disinformation. They're accusing AI firms of conflating traditional AI with generative AI to exaggerate the benefits to the climate.
Hold on. Right. Traditional AI, what's the difference? What's traditional AI? What's generative AI? What's the difference?
Traditional AI would be the kind of the stuff in the background that maybe we don't go to an LLM and prompt where you're getting it to generate stuff. So this is kind of deep learning, machine learning, you know, stuff that's happening in the background. Generative AI is the stuff that you and I are doing, going and creating images or creating text or things like that. They analysed 154 public claims and they found no verifiable evidence that generative tools like Gemini or Copilot are reducing emissions, despite these companies actually saying that they were.
How are they claiming that it would? Because what's the basis of these claims? Because as far as you know, we hear LLMs demand a huge amount of energy.
They do from a data center point of view. You know, they're very thirsty. They're put in water deprived areas. Lots of the stuff that listeners to this podcast will kind of know because we've talked about. The counter to that is, well, because of its sophistication and how good it is, AI does have the ability to have a positive impact on the environment. It can reroute flights to different directions to save on fuel and lots of other things.
That old chestnut, the old efficiencies chestnut,
Well, effectively, these two groups are saying it kind of amounts to greenwashing. And they're saying, you know, there's lots of echoes here of what some of the fossil fuel firms were saying. I would say that the two groups here who have commissioned the report, Beyond Fossil Fuels and Climate Action Against Disinformation. I mean, it's pretty clear what their agenda is on this, and probably no surprise that they've come to the conclusion they had, which is that these companies are exaggerating their climate benefits. But it's kind of interesting that's in this space already, like, you know, big oil and fossil fuel companies, you know, having almost like tobacco as well, having to have these other initiatives which are seen as net positive on the environment or on health or things like this. These people have big lobbies talking to governments and things like that as well. But yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, data centers and energy demand is huge. The International Energy Agency predicts that AI-driven data centers could account for 20% of electricity demand growth in wealthy nations this decade, which is huge.
It's mind-boggling and frankly something that he's just not really talked about very much. Yeah. It kind of just feels like, I mean, it's an astonishing stat. It kind of feels like we don't talk about the impact nearly enough. Let's jump now to India. What's been going on there?
Yes, they've opened the five-day AI Impact Summit in New Delhi, bringing together 20 world leaders and a bunch of the top tech execs to talk about global AI governance, job disruption, child safety, I think, is on the menu as well.
I've seen Macron's there, Sam Altman's there, really high-profile people. What's bringing all of these big players to India?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's some positioning going on here. And that positioning is really India as this bridge between those Western economies that are perhaps slightly more advanced and then this global South. And India are going to be this fantastic testbed almost for how AI is going to look at, you know, public services, it's going to look at education, all these bunch of things. So, yeah, kind of interesting that they've got this incredible crop of leaders and tech execs that have descended on New Delhi for this.
I mean, you've got the superpowers in AI, you've got US, you've got China. It's trying to compete. Mm. Could India be that next?
Totally.
Yeah.
And I think there's levels. I think there's China and there's America. I think India are clearly emerging now. And it's a good question. It's kind of, where does it leave us? Where do we put our alignment? Mm. We're kind of in bed with the US in terms of the tech, in terms of the AI prosperity deal that we did. We've been a little bit warmer on China. The Prime Minister's back from seeing Xi Jinping. The embassy's opening up. It's warmer relations there. So, you know, perhaps he's feeling like, you know, we don't want to be in bed with one partner. And, you know, maybe there could be something going on with India. Yeah.
Right. AI safety is something we touched upon earlier, because it's high on Prime Minister Keir Starmer's agenda right now. There was quite an astonishing story about someone who was in charge of AI safety at Anthropic. Mm. Am I right in saying they've left the business?
You're right. You've done very well not to read the headline here, which is AI safety leader says world is in peril.
Right.
Which you, I'm sure you would kind of delight your misgivings about AI. He has. They've resigned. They've written a public letter to say that the world is in peril due to AI, bioweapons and wider global crises.
Great cocktail.
He said that he plans to return to the UK to study poetry and become invisible. Maybe or maybe not with the help of AI. Who knows?
Wasn't there someone at OpenAI that kind of had a similar role that's quit as well?
Yeah, Zoe Hitzig, she quit over concerns about ads actually going into ChatGPT. And she talked about the psychological impact of AI and human relationships. So yeah, there are some big hitters that are coming out of the industry and doing so very, very publicly. I mean, these things happen. People sign NDAs, they leave businesses, you know, stuff doesn't work out, they don't agree with principles. But, you know, these are people who are leaving and being very, very public about why. And it's a headache and it's a problem for some of these companies.
When we had Karen Howe recently, she kind of took us under the bonnet from her point of view of these massive firms and their kind of almost like cult-like, religious-esque, empirical cultures is what she kind of described it as, you know, in a pursuit of this AI future. And I suppose if you are working in that business and you are seeing it from that lens, that's quite intense and I suppose quite scary. So you can maybe see why people are kind of quite frightened and, you know, want to become invisible and study poetry instead of being in that environment.
Yeah, I think what will happen though, and I think this is kind of inevitable with new technology, and I wonder if you look back at things like when lots of those mobile businesses became big, I think when social media had a rise, when this happens, there is a little bit of course correction. So I think you will start to see businesses like Anthropic, businesses like OpenAI and others really come to the surface with, what they're doing around safety and around guardrails. Because I think if there's ever a perception that these things can't be trusted, or, you know, indeed the world is in peril, that becomes incredibly problematic. This is like a consumer-facing thing. And the minute people don't trust it, don't think it's transparent or it's doing harm, they're not going to use it. And you can't show ads to people who don't exist and aren't using the platform. If people aren't using it, they're not paying subscriptions. So it's inherently linked to how these businesses are going to grow. So they've got to get it right. So I would expect something soonish from these companies around what they're doing to do the right thing.
I quite like to quit my job and go and study poetry.
Yeah.
Would be nice.
Fill your boots.
Roses are red, violets are blue. You're currently listening to AI Having a Clue.
Not bad.
Maybe I don't need to study it.
AI pessimists are 2 to a dozen, mate, so you go for it.
Okay, time for your big thing this week, James. What you got for us?
Bit of AI in space. And it's triggered by some news that at the end of last year, NASA's Perseverance rover on Mars completed its first drive across Mars using AI. And it's the first time ever in history of exploring different planets that an AI model was used to decide the route around which route it would take. So typically, this is a fairly extensive, long drawn out process where humans are drawing every single step of the route. And it's very, very slow, very laborious. NASA basically gave AI these detailed images of Mars and a bunch of terrain data. And it sucked it all up into this vision-capable generative AI model. And it looked for rocks, and it looked for slopes, and it looked for things like sand, and then it works out the safest route to go across. The team, before they put it up there, they obviously test all of this stuff. They did a simulation with 500,000 variables just to make sure that it worked. And then on the 8th and the 10th of December last year, the rover drove those AI routes and it was all successful. And, like, it's a big deal, not only because, you know, this is the first time that AI has been given probably this level of autonomy in what they said was a high-stakes, mission-critical environment. I love the word mission-critical. Outside of this, it probably throws up a few questions about how much autonomy should give AI. Question for you, though. Yeah. If I talk about AI and I talk about space and you had to name a person, who would that person be?
Elon Musk.
But the problem was, this used Anthropic's Claude, not Elon. Elon is a little bit peeved about this because he sees
shock.
Yes,
he
sees SpaceX, which is obviously his company, as the future of space exploration. This is going to sting a little bit. He's long argued that he thinks space missions will need autonomy. He thinks that humans can't or just won't be able to micromanage Mars from Earth. You know, it's 140 million miles from Earth. The radio signal takes between 5 and 20 minutes just to go one way. So imagine talking and then waiting 20 minutes for someone to come back. And his other brilliant one is he says that AI will be critical for multi-planetary life, which I'd imagine is kind of high on his agenda. I just find this whole thing with space fascinating. There's a bunch of
other stuff. Why Anthropic over what Elon's got?
I don't know. Again, that's the contract that they've got with NASA. I know as part of him going in to do Doge and that sort of stuff with the US government that he was lobbying and pushing hard for SpaceX to be getting a bunch of the NASA contracts.
Yeah.
One, he wants to do other two. Pretty lucrative, I would say. I just like the AI in space. There's a whole bunch of other things this can get into. You know, AI could start to decide what things to bring back from Mars. It could start to build things like power systems on them. There's a whole bunch of stuff in space and AI. And I probably think, without being too twee about it, you know, that is the kind of the next frontier for AI. We're here talking
about
the
next frontier for AI.
Humanoids and all that sort of stuff.
Mission critical.
I think it might accelerate what we're doing in space. And I think that's quite exciting.
There it is. It's very exciting. And I love how you've been geeking out on this. It's great. Yeah. Okay, time now for our listener question this week. And as you know, James, if your question, not yours, if someone listening, speaking to listeners, get a question gets asked on the show, you get, again, not you, James.
You don't have to.
Sorry, just wanted to be really clear.
Yeah,
you get a AI Having a Clue t-shirt. Cue the jingle.
You get an AI Having a Clue t-shirt.
Oh, it's great, that, isn't it? What's your favourite out of all the jingles that we play?
I don't like the jingles that much. I liked NVIDIA Time.
No, John! NVIDIA Time! What? You know you can't say that NVIDIA word.
NVIDIA Time!
And good, the jingle, isn't it? Anyway.
That's good.
Oh, man.
Okay, we talked about NVIDIA in one episode.
Cut it. All right, enough. Right, okay. Let's get on to Zoe's question this week. Zoe's bagged herself an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt. Zoe in Braintree. I like that people are leaving where they're from now. Old school, this is great.
Braintree, Essex, right? Braintree? You got no idea
where Braintree is.
I don't know.
Brilliant.
Zoe in Braintree, anyway, has asked, what's the realistic worst case for deepfakes in the next election cycle?
Lovely uplifting one. Fantastic.
It's all joy today, isn't it? I'm going to quit this podcast and go study poetry.
I think two sides to this. I'll start with the good. The detection around this stuff is getting better and better. So newsrooms in particular are getting way better at spotting this stuff. You've got BBC Verify. I think most news outlets have got like a verification team as standard, and in real time they're trying to sense check if stuff is real. I think when it comes to elections, voters are probably a bit more sceptical. I think people have a pretty good radar for if stuff doesn't feel real, then you know maybe they'll go to a trusted news environment and see if it is. And you know, we still go into a booth with a bit of paper and we still vote. So that kind of AI fraud bit isn't that problematic at the moment. I think if it was all digital, then perhaps it could be. The sort of shadow to all of those things is that, you know, clearly if something happens very, very close to an election where you're going to go and vote, you know, 24, 48 hours, it could be debunked, but quite hard to do that and to convince people. And even if you do correct it, a bunch of people might not even see it. You start to get into this odd world where real stuff gets dismissed as fake. So, you know, it might be real, but, you know, you don't know what to trust anymore, which isn't great. And, you know, the stuff around Cambridge Analytica is well documented on time, you know, this kind of micro-targeted stuff that happens, voice notes or video, very, very specifically tailored to specific communities and sent via private messaging apps, which is very, very hard as well. It's pretty hard to track. There's an example, George Freeman, who is the Conservative MP for Mid-Norfolk, he reported an AI-generated deepfake of him announcing in this deepfake that he was going to join Reform, and he referred it to the police. It was circulated widely online. It showed him stood there speaking to the camera, saying that he was going to switch allegiance and join Reform. I mean, most of them have, so you know, it wasn't that much of a surprise. But you know,
told you it was going to be a political one.
I think you know we have to be more vigilant around. You know, there's going to be a US presidential election. We're going to have local elections here. Clearly, general election in a few years' time. I think trusted news sources, which will be music to your ears, are more important than ever before. I think question rightly what you see on social forums, some social media, anything that's kind of shared with you privately in WhatsApp groups or other groups like that. I think you really have to kind of question if it seems sensationalist or it seems it backs up what you said. I think you've got to have that kind of thing within you that tries to suck it out. Look at people that are verifying things. The BBC Verify is very, very good. Some of the stuff they're doing in Venezuela around, you know, people crying because, you know, Trump had saved them was clearly fake, and they debunked it pretty, pretty quickly. But yeah, the next big election is going to be pretty interesting for this stuff.
And I suppose never has there been a more important time to invest in news sources that you trust and believe in and you know that you can turn to.
100%.
I've got a Cambridge Analytica story.
Have you?
So, for those who don't remember, they were involved in the first Trump election, and there was a lot of stuff that they apparently put out onto the internet that might not be true. Now, it blew up. It was a big scandal. Mm. I was working in the same building as Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, wow.
Now, we had no idea at the time what they were the business even did. We kind of thought they were in publishing or something. They were on the third floor or whatever. Now, on the day that it all blew up, that whole scandal went crazy, paparazzi were all outside our office building. Now, the CEO of Cambridge Analytica was arriving. Now, he was going to sneak round the back through basically the delivery room our old receptionist, kind of security guy, receptionist, building guy, he was the best, Ken. He was the absolute nicest guy ever. He sees him arriving and he was very passionate about the building. He went, oh, not in my space. No one's going to be harassed in my building. So he storms outside, storms through the paparazzi, kind of makes a real scene to flank him before he can cut down the back exit. And all of a sudden, he's almost like a security guard pulling him through the paparazzi into the building. And there's an amazing shot. It was on the cover of the Times and everything of Ken acting as a security guard for this Cambridge Analytica guy, which sort of made him look kind of more guilty and worse off that he needed security guards to come through. Wow. So it was a whole thing. Yeah, it was a interesting week at work.
Alexandra Nix was the former CEO of Cambridge Analytica, and I once saw him buying sourdough in my local Waitrose.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's I'm really...
You've got a dog, I've got a wolf.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder if any of that will make the edit. time now to bring in a brilliant guest, someone I know that you absolutely love, James. We're joined by someone who's using AI to do something really interesting in a very creative way, to bring history to life.
It's Matt Reconstructs History. We talked about him before, this incredible YouTube channel that he's built. He's married his passion for history with his skill in AI. He's someone who's always been fascinated by the past, people and places, and the everyday moments that we rarely get to see. So he's recreated these scenes for us, and it's this incredible, vivid, immersive look into what life was really like in different eras. There's nothing flashy about him. It's just this way to make history feel really real, really tangible, really accessible. Matt, welcome to the show.
Matt, welcome. So thank you for joining us on AI Haven't a Clue. Look, before we get into everything that you're doing in the world of AI and how you're doing it and how you're going about achieving it, can you just tell everybody a little bit about your channel, about the content that you're creating and how it's kind of connecting with people and what it's doing out there?
Long story, actually. I actually already like 2 years ago wanted to start to make history content and started doing it at that time where AI was mostly pictures and any animation of that in any kind of sense was very, very bad, to be honest about it. It really looked bad. And I couldn't get it to work at that time, so I started to play with other subjects, like more funny stuff and stuff like that. And like in a year's time, I developed my skill within AI, and I suddenly start to see that there are some possibility when it comes to recreating like paintings, drawings, like putting them into photorealistic photos. And then with the AI tools we have today, we can actually animate them in a way where it feels real, that you're actually there walking, looking around, or being in the specific things. And I think people really relate on the sense that this is the city, like, for example, London, one that I did that had a lot of views, and I guess you guys have seen as well. They really relate to it, that this is a city that they walk every day or they have visited in some kind of regards, and they can see those historical sites, especially the London Bridge that is not there today. I think especially places that don't exist in the same kind of sense that they do today are very interesting to see how they might have been. And I think also that word might is important to have in this conversation as well. That is not 100% correct. I think that's what people really relate to as it is now. And I think also with content that are coming in the future is not necessarily just cities, but events, as you mentioned, James, just before, that you actually started with the Gettysburg Address, that AI is getting to a place where we can actually recreate specific things we know that was written down, that was set in certain places, and with their portraits being drawn or painted at the same time, we can actually recreate the same person almost saying what we believe could be their voice with a specific, let's say, accent or whatever it is.
But you make these amazing videos, and for those that haven't seen them, obviously well worth watching, but they are these, you know, huge productions, if that's what they look like. They look like a big kind of animated, expensive thing. You obviously make it with AI, but how? How do you make it with AI? How do you get it, you know, from your brain or your research onto the screen looking like that? Can you tell us about that process?
Oh, it's a long process. I would like to say
that's good. I'm actually really pleased that it isn't an easy one button thing, and that it is requiring skill and talent.
It depends again to what kind of historical accuracy you want to go to, because you could basically just go to any image generator and say, "Give me London in the 1600s," and then it will make something that it thinks is correct, and most likely is not correct. What happened was I got inspired by another creator that is not doing it anymore, but they got this idea of turning those old paintings into something real photos. And you can basically do that in most image generator today. Upload a painting or something that is in the public domain for the last 300 years, and then do a photorealistic photo of that as well. And then, of course, you have to edit that as well. Be sure that it's not trying to imagine too many new stuff, because it will do that. It has to imagine, especially if it's just some drawing and stuff. Then you take that picture and you start to think more like a film director, or in the story you want to go. What is going to happen in the picture? How much movement do you want to have, and where is it going? And then it also does some imagination in that process as well. You need to look around. Sometimes you can pan around and then it suddenly have, I don't know, the Eye of London or something there that shouldn't be there because it thinks it's London, but I mean, it's not the right time. So, and then what I also added on top of mine is taking a picture and making different angles within it. So like actually making AI go into the picture and try to imagine the different angles if you stood in different location inside of that. And yes, sometimes it is a bit of imagination that it does, but it's based off the original painting, is my argument at least.
And are you okay with that? Because not people shouldn't look at this and go, that is 100% accurate, because no account, there's always different accounts. Take the Great Fire of London, there'll be multiple accounts that were recorded. There's no kind of one, there's certain things that are agreed in history, right? But so much of it is up for debate. You think about the JFK assassination. I mean, we still can't agree on that however many years down the line. Are there elements where you're kind of okay with, I know, I'm not sure if this is 100% accurate, but it's a representation and that's kind of, that's your spin on it.
Yeah, like two things I want to say there. First of all, I'm so lucky that AI generator, it's so focused that people will give their comments and their opinion about it for sure in the comments. So if something is wrong, someone will have commented on it in the comments. So I'm lucky about that. Secondly, I think I have like a balance here I think I want to hit between historical accuracy and the feeling of being there. And it's hard to fit the right way of doing it, because often if you try 100% historical accuracy, it will feel more clunky, more not like you're not really there. So it's a little bit of a balance. And I try at least to say it's AI and so on in the beginning of the videos to make sure that people know it is, and then be critical of that. But like for me, it's still a moral dilemma I'm having. How much should I in this actually tell and talk about, be critical of what you're seeing right now, even though it's me making it and showing it to you? It is a little bit of a balance, I feel. I can't find the right way.
Tell me about how history and AI kind of came together.
I always enjoyed history in many sense, in many ways. Of course, always the world wars. I do enjoy the long documentaries and watching them about whatever happened in the different battlefields or behind the scenes when it comes to politics and how it went about and came to where we are today. I think you can learn a lot and what decisions you should make today from that. And the AI sense basically come, I have a background in digital marketing. I'm not really working anymore with that, but as a consultant, I did that. And for big companies, I come from Denmark myself, so I worked a bit there as well. Basically, kind of around when I got my daughter, she was born, I didn't have any really contracts. I wanted to take some leave. That was actually possible for me. Mm-hmm. And whenever she was sleeping, I kind of started playing around with AI because it was kind of the thing to do at that time. And I knew that was something I had to learn no matter what. And I wanted to learn, especially in the digital marketing field. I think I found it more fun to try to create something that I would enjoy myself than a million ads.
Matt, let me quickly pick up on something you said there. You said that you feel like you had to learn about AI.
Well, like, I think I'm a curious person. So anything that's new, I want to learn if I can use it to anything I'm doing in any kind of sense. So for me personally and whatever I'm doing, if I can see something and I can see an advantage it can give me in anything, I will try to learn it. And I think AI is something you either learn or you don't. And if you don't, I think you're just going to be set a bit behind.
What about, I mean, some of the numbers on the channel, you talked about London there, 1.5 million views. At what point were you doing this stuff and you got a sense that, you know, people liked it? I mean, some of the comments are incredibly complimentary about what you're doing here. When did it go, I guess, from a hobby to something where, you know, wow, you're getting these kind of numbers on there?
Yeah, so as I said, I for the year before I actually started this channel, I have, as you can see, I have another YouTube channel as well with AI as well. So I had the experience on how to use it and I could see I could apply it here. So I actually knew it from the first video. I just knew I had to find a way of telling the story correctly, being better at figuring out what pictures is interesting, what drawings, and something that's the side I'm developing on still being an historian, because there is a big responsibility with what I'm doing now to try to, like, I'm doing more research for every video than I'm starting to actually do images and videos, because what you start to see in this, I don't know if you have experienced well, a lot of new creators, because AI is so accessible, and that's the great thing about AI, but it's also a downside as well, is that anyone can do what I'm doing, but the quality level, and I don't know if I want to say morals, but like there's a lot of there that don't research or they don't really verify what they see. So for example, London, there's a lot that show 1600s London, but it's the new St. Paul's Cathedral, the dome there is that came later on after the fire.
Really want to ask you about how you make this content. But first, because you've just brought it up, I want to start with, There is a viewpoint out there that there's kind of a more of a responsibility in this day and age with AI generated content for audiences to kind of be thinking a little bit more about what they're seeing. I guess questioning what they're seeing a little bit more. You know, from your point of view, where do you sit with kind of the world of AI generated content? Is it something which the audience should embrace? Is it something which is an art form, or is it a bit of kind of what some would call slop, a bit of fun?
I think it depends on, as it has always been. You need to be critical of what you're seeing and you need to question it. The only problem is now there's so much of it and there's so many that easily can access it. That's the problem. So you just need to be the critical the same way you would be about a documentary, a news story you see. If you watch one station or another one, is it colored in a certain kind of way? You should be the same on YouTube, of course. Of course, there is the problem that we can't do that with everything. So there is some kind of level you need to be as a creator, and not everyone is thinking enough about that. But I think AI is just a tool. It's just something that democratizes content making from big production companies to small creators to be able to do things that before was not possible. And I don't know if you've seen, like, the latest video model coming out of China, still not out, is kind of crazy. They're doing action movies of Marvel, and I don't know, like,
it's the Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt one, right?
Yeah, man, it's wild. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
James, do you think this is what Matt does is a little bit different to some of the previous content, AI content creators we've had before? Because we've had, you know, for example, the ladies that run Serafina Valora, we've had Janine Wright from Inception Point AI. Now they, you could argue, have come in, brought AI into kind of an existing creative space, and some would say have taken away from human creatives, or taken jobs away, or roles away from, or revenue away from human creatives. Now, do you think it's a bit different with Matt? Because this, what Matt does, I assume, is brand new and kind of a new entry to the market, right?
Well, it's like mega accessible. I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, this stuff had existed before. Like, everything Matt creates is based on an image or text that's written, or, you know, where you might have photographs and that kind of thing. So his job as a historian is to piece all those things together to give an interpretation of history. That's kind of no different to, I guess, what historians have done for years and years. But apart from they've written books or they've made documentaries, which cost lots and lots of money. But, you know, he's kind of doing nothing different. I mean, 1.5 million people have seen that reconstruction around London in the 1600s, which there's probably a bunch of books out there which I'm never going to read about it, but you know, he's done it in a sort of really engaging way. And the best bit is that Matt inserts himself in the story as well, so you kind of get Matt crop up in all these things too, which is quite cool.
Matt, what's the reaction been from the history world, from historians and not necessarily kind of punters and consumers, but from that side of things?
Kind of wild, if I can be honest. I have been invited on quite a few podcasts from professors at different universities as well, especially for US. The biggest audience I have is from US, and the second is from the UK, of course. And from US, especially high school teachers are really reaching out because they want to try to learn. They're doing something specific about their local community or what it is. Actually, also both the US military and the Navy has been reaching out because it's 250 years of independence this year. I think what is here is also a possibility of doing education in a different way, not specifically with what I'm doing, but trying maybe, and I think that's something I want to work on further ahead, is giving the knowledge of how to do that specifically towards education, to make education more interested or like than it was maybe when we went and we just read a text.
Matt, it's really refreshing actually, and I've a lot of even more respect for you right now because you are very considered with your approach to the content you're creating. I think it's really interesting to hear how much you think about it, how, you know, obviously the fact you label it AI, but also the fact that you're kind of very concerned with everything that you've been telling us about. And I think that's great. And would you have a message to anyone out there who is creating content with AI, kind of pushing content out there, getting clicks, getting views, getting revenues, maybe without the same consideration and care that you're putting into the content?
I think it's a difficult one because I know the community. I know there's a lot of young guys that want to, earlier it was drop shipping, earlier it was digital marketing agencies. Then it's a way of making money. Starting as a young guy, I'm grinding, I'm working hard, and it's hard to take that away. And that's not the main focus necessarily. I think especially when I got my daughter, it's something you realize it's not just about you need to earn money. You also need to have some kind of, what is the world that you want the future to be in, you know, and if you're a young guy, I don't know how much you're going to realize about that at that point at 19, 18, 16, how young they ever are to start with. But I think it's important to think about that you had some kind of moral etiquette in it. Like, how would your mom or your father think about what you're doing and the etiquette in that as well?
There's so many ones that you've covered. London, Boston, Edinburgh. A couple of weeks ago, you did the mega city, ancient Rome, which was amazing. How do you make decisions on what you're going to cover?
Well, basically two things. There's a lot of requests that I both receive in the comments and in email. Actually, half of my emails is, can you please do my city with 50 people in it? Yes, I have time for that. I can't even make it to York because I want to do Paris first or Rome or whatever it was. The next one is a little shift where I'm going to go to the American Revolution, of course, with the 250 years. I think it's a very interesting story to tell. Mm. And in that, I'm also trying to use some of the new videos tools that are available. So there's going to be some more acting, if I can put it like that, where we actually reenact different scenes in the Congress and reading of the Declaration of Independence, which is a beautiful document in my view, some of the words that put in there and stuff like that.
James, if you could pick a historical era for Matt to reconstruct, what would you do? What story would you love to see?
I was sort of fascinated by, if you think, you know, you had sort of like Black Plague and then you had fire, like the whole London bit for me, because I've watched a few of these before and actually since watching Matt's stuff. And he's right, people just sort of skip over lots of bits. The whole bit about London Bridge, you know, people used to live on London Bridge, the kind of it's all packed in, people were overhanging. So I think I quite like all the Great Fire of London stuff. I like milling around Pudding Lane and embankments. So But he's done that one already. Maybe you could come to my hometown, which is a tiny town in Dorset in the south of England.
You're doing what everyone does in the emails.
In Shaftesbury.
Can you come and create my...
There's about three people there.
I'm sorry, Matt.
There's a big hill. Yeah, when you've got a free moment, Matt.
But I have to be honest, like, actually, the voice actor, the voice I'm using, which is an AI-generated voice, he reached out to me because he actually also ended up watching this one, and he was also advocating for his city. I don't remember what it was, but maybe I listened to him before you, James. He has some stake in it as well.
Yeah, nice. Well, Matt, look, if you need any actors voiced for the next one, James and I, we're here. We can do American accents, so fear not. Before we let you go, Matt, we play a game on the show when we have guests on. It's called Chat Roulette. We ask them to open up their LLM of choice, the app that they like to turn to ask it the silliest things and the deepest questions. And we want to know, what was the last thing that you asked it? We'll give you ours as well. And to make things easier, James, would you go first?
Yeah, it's not another great one from me. I needed to know, my outside tap's broken. I needed to know how to connect a hose pipe to my inside tap. So I needed to know what connector. So I was taking a picture of that.
Fun.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, mine's not, it's better. It's not that much better. I host a podcast about football for kids, the Ultimate Football Heroes podcast. Available wherever you get your podcasts. I asked it for some football related jokes. Mm-hmm. You want to hear one?
Go.
Sorry in advance for this, Matt. Why was the football field always wet?
Don't know.
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Matt, rescue us here, because that's two diabolical things. Have you got anything a bit more interesting
for us?
What's
the last thing you searched for, Matt?
So actually, my last question, a personal, was a forgiveness difference between Catholic and Protestant.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and what's the answer?
Protestants, they confess directly to God, while Catholics believe that the church can give the forgiveness, while Protestants believe it's God.
Very, very good.
Every time we play this game, whoever is on the show has something far more interesting, intellectual, and inspiring than whatever we have, which is usually a little rubbish. Matt, so interesting to hear about everything that you get up to. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting.
He was so good.
I'll be honest, James, part of me thought that could have been a little bit
you
boring.
Liked him. I could tell. I liked him. I could tell.
I liked him a lot because I think he is genuinely using AI as a creative tool to do something that wasn't done before, you couldn't have done before, but he's doing so in what seems to be, at least, a really responsible way, and he seems to have a lot of care and a lot of passion for what he's doing, and kind of understands the power of what he can do. So yeah, really big fan of Matt now.
And I know you were trying to sort of push him on, who are these other people who are creating stuff? You know, they're clearly not as good and they're not putting in this care. And I thought he was a little bit guarded in that, rightly, because he's part of that community. But there's levels, and this guy is, he's Champions League. He really is.
Well, but it is important. If you were going to effectively educate millions of young people,
100%.
You have a responsibility to deliver the truth. You have a responsibility to deliver something that is accurate. And it's very, very important.
Yeah, you're so good. He didn't disappoint. I love it when that happens.
Right, a lovely way to end this week's show. A big thank you for joining us on AI Having a Clue. If you would like to tell a friend, if you would like to tell a neighbor, I mean, tell anybody that might want to know more about the world of AI, we'd be very happy for them to join the club. They can subscribe, as you can too. You can rate and share the podcast. We would love it. You could also support us on Patreon and follow us on Substack to stay up to date with what's going on in the world of AI. If you've got a question or a weird, fascinating AI story to share with us, as always, drop us an email at aihaven'taclue@gmail.com. A big thanks to Team AI Having a Clue, Molly, David and Alex. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Remember, James,
Navid, stay curious.